to the Health and Self-Care podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Staveley, a GP from Somerset, and today I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Andrew Tresidder, also a GP by background from Somerset.
And today we're talking to Dr. Deb Gompert, and the subject is Show Me Your Meds. Deb, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're here to talk about today?
Of course. Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me. My name's Deb and I'm a GP working in South Somerset, and I've been a GP for absolute years. I won't go into how long I've been a GP for. But for the last 8 years, I've taken up a community job whereby I go and visit people in their homes, and I work very much with people like the district nurses, the rehab team, social care, voluntary sector. I work with primary care and secondary care, and very much focus on people and their relatives or their carers who are around them. And it's very much about what matters to people. So it's person-centered care. It's not necessarily thinking about pathways, because people don't always fit into pathways. And it's working across organisations to get the right care for people in the right place where they want to be at the right time.
And so how does that look on a day-to-day basis?
So on a day-to-day basis, I work from the community hospital because it's where the district nurses and the rehab team live. So we occupy the same space, because in reality, we're all looking after the same people. So then you realise that you're all talking about those same people in the community, and that by working together, we bring together all the knowledge that each of us has to get the right care for people, and reducing the steps along the way. So it makes it more streamlined, more smooth. We each bring our professional opinions to that information, to that group. So, and then we also link in with the GP surgeries. So once a week, I will meet with their surgeries, their health coaches, their doctors. So they will refer us people to go and see. And we do all very much. We learn from each other. We share responsibility. And it means we get the right thing for people.
This is really interesting. How did you identify the need? And historically, has there always been a need, or is there an increasing need with the change of population over the years?
I think there's two things. The population is getting older, and certainly we're seeing people. I used to think of older age group being sort of 65 upwards, but through my career, it's now definitely 75, 80. And I think the average age of the people that I see is probably late 70s, early 80s. But I do see people in their 90s and up to 100. I think pre-COVID, I have to use the word COVID, sorry, there weren't quite so many pathways. And now there seem to be more pathways. We've got urgent care response. We've got rapid response. We've got hospital at home. And people get really confused as to who's looking after them. So people used to call us the complex care team. So I now try to say I'm part of the community team. I'm the doctor working with the community team. It makes it less complicated for people. And I work with your surgery to try and keep it simple for people to understand. And because otherwise people sometimes say, I've got eight teams looking after me. And that's really confusing for the population who are trying to streamline services. So I think it's also about who place-based care, who works around the population, who have we got in the community, who are the voluntary services, what have we already got, but what does our population need as well? So rurally, have we got the bus system to get the right person into the right group that they need? Do we have that available? And if not, why not? Why don't we look for it? It's a little bit about how do we find the people who can't get to the care they need? And I know this is slightly off topic to Show Me Your Meds, but we've recently looked at post-knock and care. So asking the postman to look out for people they're worried about, and they can knock on people's doors, and we've got volunteers to support them. So it is very much about the community, and then supporting people and their carers and their relatives in that community with the right people, keeping it simple. And we've got to keep it simple and focusing on what matters most to people.
It sounds to me what you're describing is what I would say was old-fashioned general practice. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It completely is old-fashioned general practice. And we seem to have gone away from that. And there's nothing more rewarding than sitting and listening to somebody's story. Who are they? What did they do? and having the time to find out what their story is, because finding out their story and their a little bit about their life impacts on what they want, who they are, what they need to keep them happy and motivated. It is old school GP. Yeah.
No, it's knowing the person, and we would love it that I'm sure the GPs who are practicing now would love to be able to give this level of care. But I know that since I started as a GP in 1989, the volume of work has probably multiplied by a factor of 3 or 4. People don't come in with just one problem. They come in with multiple. They may be on multiple medications, whereas in the late 80s, not many people were on a lot of medications, and some people were on 1 or 2. And I have to say, we didn't look after things like diabetes to the level that they are these days, and there was much less of it around. So I'm not trying to stop us yearning for the principles of old-fashioned care, but I think we do need the other services like yourselves to be able to supplant what is a very busy day in practice these days. Is that an unfair comment?
No, I don't think so. And I think we will often say to the GPs, the people that we can help you with are those people that when you've got to your 10 or 15 minutes that you think, I wish I had a bit more time. Those are the people. So we don't just see housebound people. We will see people who can get out. But that environmental review and seeing how someone's managing in their home offers so much information. And I often feel that I'm a little bit of a detective, and it's professional curiosity. Some of the team say it's being nosy, but it's not nosy. It's professional curiosity, really, to see how people are managing. But we don't take people away from their GPs. So it's very much involvement and keeping the GPs in the equation, because ultimately they have often got that life history sometimes with those people. So it is continuity that is really important.
Yes. Interesting. And if you were a hospital specialist, which specialty would it be?
Well, I have done medicine in the past, and I went through a whole load of specialties that I wanted to do. And I think ultimately I just love people. And I do see a lot of older people. So I suppose I have a leaning towards being a geriatrician, but actually I see a lot of adults as well. And I think it's a generalist. It's that generalism that I really enjoy, being able to look after a whole person and not just an individual bit. And I will say to them, I'm not here to look after one bit of you. I'm here to look after all of you. And that includes, you know, your care, how you're getting your food, how you are managing to get in and out the bath or the shower, and how your carer is managing, or your wife or your husband. It's about the whole picture. And people often, you can just see them relax in front of you, and trying to navigate the system at the moment is quite difficult.
That reminds me of a lot of conversations I've had with patients in the past who are rather confused by the range of consultants that they're under, and trying to understand how the consultants can make decisions when they don't know about, yeah, well, how can the heart specialist make decisions when they don't know what the kidney specialist has said? So it really resonates that that's what's necessary.
I think that's really right, actually. And I suppose then the bit that sometimes ties it together is the medicines that people are on. And I suppose we are medicalizing a lot of things, that sometimes there are other things that we could potentially be doing things for, like, so for example, diabetes, exercise and diet. We need to remember to look at those things, and isolation and loneliness. We need to look at what we have around, what groups, rather than necessarily medicalizing people. So there is something about getting the answers to what matters to people first. And I'm not knocking medicines. Medicines absolutely have their place for long-term conditions and treatments. But sometimes there are other things we can do. And I suppose the WHO will say 1 in 2 people don't take their medicines as prescribed. What I see is 1 in 4 people not taking large amounts of medication. And what I mean by that is 3 to 6 months of medication we can find in people's homes. And we will see people going in and out of hospital who haven't been taking their medication. And it's something as simple as the fact that they can't get to the toilet for their water tablets, which means that they're not taking their medication. So their legs have swollen, so they've got infection in their legs, or their heart failure isn't being managed as well. So they end up in hospital. And actually something as simple as looking at someone's medicines can give you the answer to why someone is not as well as they could be and why they may be going in and out of hospital more. And people don't like to tell you sometimes because they feel that they're letting you down. They feel like they're letting the doctor down, and they may be worried that you may not prescribe for them then. And some people can't remember to take their medicine. It's very difficult. I don't know if you're on medicines yourself, but some, you know, taking more than twice a day medicines is actually quite hard to remember. And we need to look at simplifying regimes. But what we did was we asked, because I work with the community teams who are going into people's homes, we just simply asked them to look at medicines when they're in there. And the majority of people we found not taking their medicines had had medication reviews that hadn't picked up the problem. And it's looking at the boxes, looking at the date, saying, where else have you got your medicines? And we found 2 years of insulin pens in people's homes. And then it opens up a conversation, and it's you know, what is important, and let's talk about the evidence behind the medications, and let's work out what's right. But it's hard for doctors or prescribers to stop prescribing sometimes, because we feel we need to do that. And it's allowing people, giving people permission to listen to the person who you're looking after.
This is wonderful to hear a holistic overview that's looking at what is individually important, because quite a lot of NICE guidance has a very short paragraph early on saying lifestyle, please address lifestyle factors and take an individualized approach, without actually expanding into what that is. And then one ends up on the next three or four medicines related to the condition, whether it's the four pillars of heart failure or others. Would you like to comment on that?
NICE guidelines are really interesting, and there is not a lot of evidence around prescribing for older people. There is more for diabetes now, and for moderate and severe frailty, the targets are lowered, but often in trials, older people are included. They're excluded because they're older, and we don't want to cause problems. So we are looking at, you're right, with the NICE guidelines for older people, we'll often see treat on an individualized basis. So we are looking at some prescribing guidelines with the British Geriatric Society, with various ICSs across the country, and with the National Prescribing League, to see if we can offer some guidance and work with NICE to see if we can support people with prescribing for older people, to give them that confidence that it's okay to not carry on your statin when you're 95 and things like that.
That sounds absolutely great, because sometimes there is actually performance management, quaff or whatever, which means that virtually everyone should be on certain medications simply because they have that illness. How did you come up with the name Show Me Your Meds? Because it's pithy, it's catchy, and it really comes to the point of what you're doing.
Because unless you look at someone's medication, you don't identify the problem. So the first 40 people we identified, 39 of them had had a medication review in the previous year, a third in their homes, a third in the GP surgery, and a third on the phone. And none of them had recognised there was a large amount of non-adherence to their medication. And actually, we often call it Show Me Your Meds, Please, because there's something about medicines and stopping prescribing and money. So people feel that if you stop prescribing, you're doing it for cost. And also you have to not make people feel that you're taking something away because you feel that you can't treat them anymore. So it is a sensitive conversation that you have to respect people's wishes. But there's also the case that if you go in and someone hasn't taken their medication for 3 months, then it's dangerous to ask them to take all of it sometimes. If you put them onto a lot of blood pressure medication, you run the risk of falls. So it is purely looking at someone's medication, identifying a problem. That's why we call it Show Me Your Meds. And then the second step is obviously you need someone to sort out and look at the prescribing. And quite often, where we work, it is our teams, the community teams, but we work very closely with the pharmacy teams in the GP surgeries and the primary care networks, the pharmacy techs and the pharmacists. They will do visits. They will monitor people's medicines for us. And because some of our pharmacy techs work in the pharmacies, then they are seeing these people's medicines coming through. So it all links together. So we're all aware of what's happening to try and keep people safe. And it's actually really interestingly, it's something you can look at. It's tangible. You can see someone's medicine. So it's not a woolly sort of measure. And you can feel like you're making a difference. So the teams really like looking for medication and bringing big bags back into the surgery and go, this is why this person is not managing. And we need to do something different. So it's a bit of a flag to say, let's go and have a conversation with someone. And it's not difficult. And sometimes the younger doctors will say, well, I don't know where to start. It's really complicated. They've got so many long-term conditions. And I would just say, well, just go and have a chat. Go and talk to the person. Go and find out who they are. That's all you need to do. It's simple. And it's keeping it simple that's key.
And there's something there about giving the patient permission to be themselves and to explain why they can't take that water tablet because they haven't got an upstairs toilet or whatever it happens to be. And it's marvellous to have that reason to be able to have that conversation. I always used to be surprised when patients died, the bags of medication that would come back to the surgery. And we never actually made that connection until you've done the Show Me Your Meds of thinking, actually, there's probably an awful lot of other people out there who've got bags of medication they're not taking, not just this patient who's died.
We did a talk in a retirement village in Bristol, and we called it Me, My Medicines and the Environment. And it was really interesting talking to people as opposed to your patients and trying to pitch it to the right level. And I did bring in about the environment and how we're affecting the environment and talked about medicines and not throwing them down the toilet, and not putting them in the bin and taking them back to the chemist so that they can be disposed of correctly. So we put a lockbox on the wall there and started to collect medications for people. And we collected as much waste of medications in 6 weeks in a retirement village of 300 people as we collected in our PCN in 12 weeks, of 30,000 people. So it just goes to show how much waste there is in the community and how scary that is of the money we're wasting, the impact for people's health and the effect on the environment. And I think the effect on the environment actually made people think, I mean, we weren't disastrous about it, but we talked about this fact that there's £90 million of medicine stored in people's homes at any one point in time not being used. And that's probably an underestimate, to be honest.
And environmentally, that's an awful lot of carbon that's used in the making of the medicines, in the transmission, in all the efforts done to that. So it's not about cost saving, it's about spending the resources we have got wisely. And for every patient to be empowered to have a conversation of the style that you're having with them about what's important, because nobody should be on 17 different medications. I'm not saying that you ever find anybody that is. I had a little fantasy a while back that actually it was a safeguarding issue if you were on more than a dozen or 15 medicines. But anyway, please kick me in the shins for making that unfair comment at all, because I'm sure all of those would have been prescribed with very good intent and with good rational.
I always remember there's a lovely play, and I can't remember who it's by, set in an old people's home. And the key characters say, going through their medication, they say, oh, I take this medication for nausea. And I've got nausea because I take this medication. I take this medication. And she goes through this long list of medication, and she gets down to the final medication that has caused all these side effects. She says, can't remember why I take this one.
There's some great newspaper articles that also talk about people taking medication. And I'm on this one for this, and I'm on this one. And then somebody said, I'd not fallen over, but had a fall. And that makes you into the, gives you a whole different sort of category. And then I'm taking another medication for my bones, and then I'm taking something else. And there's an article by the British Geriatric Society called Lost in Translation, where they talk about medicines and talk about, as a prescriber, we need to be careful about the language we use when we're prescribing, that a painkiller might not necessarily kill all the pain. And a medication isn't necessarily always for life. And we have to have the right conversations with people. And we need to be prepared to talk about alternatives and what if you don't take it and numbers needed to treat, and be really honest about what we're doing for people.
I'm very interested that you should say that, because I used to find that sometimes people would say, I need an antibiotic to make you make me better. And my sales pitch would always be, well, there's three types of antibiotics. There's must have, may have, and shouldn't have. And actually, antibiotics will not get you better. They will kill bacteria. It's your immune system that makes you better. What can we do to support that if we're going to give you antibiotics, or if we're not going to give you antibiotics? How can we help your body, which is an amazing device, machine, tool, whatever you want to say our bodies are, a self-regulating system that's actually designed to be healthy. And medications have a phenomenal place sometimes, but we also need to use them to support the body's self-healing mechanisms.
I think the other conversation that's difficult to have with patients is the recognition of our own mortality, and that conversation around when do you stop medications, when the statin one's a big debate, isn't it? How long do you carry on taking statins for? And I remember my mother-in-law at 89 being very upset when her GP suggested that she should be stopping her statins. And we tried having a conversation with her about the fact, well, yeah, the effect of the statins won't take place for another 10 years and then you'll be 100. And do you really need them? Those conversations are quite tricky, aren't they, as well? And sometimes people think that if you're around the deprescribing idea, if you're stopping their medication, it means that you've put them on the dirt heap and that's it.
Absolutely. And I think it's about communication, being really honest and having that conversation with people about what really matters. What makes you smile? What would you not want to happen to you? What's a no-no? And I think the more we communicate and communicate with people's families around them, you know, and their daughters and sons, if they're not in the room, is just invaluable and so key to all of this. And I think if you talk to people, then you can get it right. We can have those conversations and still make people feel valued and important, and there are things we can do for people, and we're, you know, there may be something different that we should be doing, and it may not be a medicine. It could be something simple as making sure we've got the right people around them, or making sure we've got the right bed, or the right, I don't know, music even.
The numbers needed to treat for some medication are quite high. The numbers needed to treat for activity is one. The numbers needed to treat for smile to get benefit is one. Dem, this is really important work. Has it been nationally recognised? Are there some awards that you have won?
We've been nominated. Excuse me, I've lost my voice a bit. We've been nominated for a few awards. We've had Steve Powers come down and visit, which has been lovely to show him what we're doing. We put together a training package. We are hoping we can send that around regional pharmacy teams across the country. We have had requests for our training package across the country as well. So I will sometimes sit in meetings and someone will say, oh, this is a project called Show Me Your Meds. And I'll go, yeah, that's me. So I'm a team. So it is recognised and people are talking about it, but it's not rocket science at the end of the day. It is just good care. It really is. It's nothing rocket science wise. It's just looking after people correctly.
That's fascinating. And I'm curious, we've heard about you. How many people do you work with? How many are there in your team? Is it just you and you have to liaise with everyone, or are there several doctors, several pharmacists?
There's myself, but there's the district nurses, the rehab team, and then there's the people from the GP practices. But we all count ourselves as working together, even though we're employed by different people. Because if you put the person at the centre, then you all, and you say, yes, how can I help? Then that's how it works.
That's lovely. I think we're coming to the end of our time slot now, aren't we, Andrew?
We are indeed.
Thank you so much, Deb. Is there any last minute thing that you feel you'd like to tell us that we've not talked about yet?
I'd quite like to say, if you're a prescriber, prescribe for the person with the illness, not just the illness. If you don't prescribe but go into people's homes, please have a conversation with them about what's important to them and their medication, and look at the medication. And if you're neither of those, but you've got older relatives, have a look at their medicines too, because actually everyone can do this. You don't need to be medically trained. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Deb. I can feel a book in there somewhere as well. Anyway, thank you very much indeed. And thank you, everybody, for listening to our Health and Self-Care podcast.
Go well.